You're listening to Michigan Politics, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Matt Bach.
This is Matt Bach, and welcome to the Michigan Politics, huh? That's the name of the podcast. Pulling a little bit on my stand-up background there that we talked about. I'm very honored to be joined by Charles Mitchell, and I'm going to probably slaughter your title, so I'll let you kind of explain who you are, where you're from, and we're talking today here at the Michigan Municipal League's 2018 convention in Grand Rapids. And Mr. Mitchell was one of our speakers talking about the whole medical marijuana and recreational marijuana issue, and he's from Denver, so they've had a lot of experience in this. So go ahead and tell a little about yourself and your role in Denver and your background.
Sure. I am a senior assistant city attorney for the city and county of Denver, and I sort of split my time as a city attorney between general employment issues and employment issues that relate to marijuana, as well as civil litigation issues that have come up since the legalization of marijuana. So that is primarily what I do. I've been with the city for about 4 years, came on actually as one of the folks hired with the funds from marijuana rollout to sort of handle the civil litigation.
Okay. So let's start right with that. What is the issue? Because people think, marijuana comes to our state, everything's going to be fine. So what are some of the legalities that you've had to deal with that people might not be aware of?
Well, that's a good question. I think people generally on big picture level think, this sounds like a good thing, let's do it. Or No, that's not what I want to do. But right. This was in Colorado, it was passed by the voters as a ballot initiative and became a constitutional amendment.
It's been how many years now?
The medical side was passed in 2000.
Okay.
The retail recreational sales was passed in November of 2012, mm-hmm. but the first actual sale transaction of recreational marijuana took place on January 1st, 2014.
Okay.
So that's certainly one of the things we learned and advocate is that there be a nice long runway before you take off.
Okay.
And so we had the regulatory scheme in place for medical marijuana for essentially 10 years before retail became
and that
legal.
Did help kind of setting things
it
up?
It certainly did because, excise and license and the regulatory structure, all of that was put in place. Now, obviously, it's different for retail, but there was at least a platform to build on. And then even after passage in at the end of 2012, they still built in a good year and 2 months to build out the regulatory structure before sales started.
Did you find that a lot of the shops and dispensaries that had gotten set up during the medical marijuana part kind of stayed in business with recreational use, or was there a different operators for those two kind of things?
Some did, certainly. Some who had the medical licenses applied for the retail licenses as well. They're entirely separate. They're two different licenses. And in fact, the stores themselves are often separate or at least segregated.
So oh, really?
If okay. you are a medical card holder and you're purchasing for medical purposes, there will sometimes even be a separate entrance, but there'll certainly be a separate area that's designated. The store runs separately, keeps separate records and all that because the taxation rules are different and the process is different. So,
okay.
But some who were already in that side of the business then applied for retail licenses okay. and did that as well.
So we were getting into the legal issue. So so what happened? So you had a runway, but then so let me ask one more question before I get into that. You mentioned that there was some revenue that they were able to hire you. So because a lot of people here in Michigan think there's going to be this big influx of cash coming
yes.
in if we do that. So let's talk about that first, and then we'll get into the legal
okay,
questions.
Okay, sure. Well, certainly the licensing and taxation and fees that are charged
yeah.
create revenue.
Yeah.
And in Colorado in 2017, calendar year 2017, mm-hmm. The revenues from the retail sales exceeded $1.5 billion.
Wow.
And the fees and taxes and licenses and all that, the revenues that were generated from that industry amounted to about $250 million. So there's certainly a financial aspect to it, but I would caution anybody to think that this is going to solve all of the municipal problems of
yeah.
the city because it really is I think it's certainly less than 1% of Denver's budget comes from marijuana. I think it's probably even more like 0.5%. I'm not really sure, but it is not a huge amount of money in terms of the overall budget. Right. And, you know, the net revenues are significantly less than
expenses.
That. Because everybody had to ramp up. Every city agency, I think last as of last year, there were 60 new positions in the city. There were additional hires in every agency to deal with it.
What kind of jobs are we talking about? Like for
additional lawyers, additional police and fire, additional excise and licensing folks.
Okay.
All of the different areas that, you know, it really touches every agency. It's not really an isolated issue, no matter whether you're with environmental health or child services or police and fire, obviously, are big ones. But every agency has an impact or an input. And I think one of the reasons the rollout was pretty successful in Colorado is that one of our mayor's appointee in charge of marijuana policy, Ashley Kilroy, right from the beginning had monthly meetings with every agency, and we all sat around a huge table and everybody brought up whatever issues they'd been seeing and how we could all deal with them. So there was a lot of exchange of information. Mm-hmm. It wasn't siloed or looked on as a purely fire issue or police enforcement issue or whatever. It really touches every agency.
Right. So you talked about the revenues a little bit. The state, did they earmark where that money had to go, or was it into the general city general fund, or did you have to specific uses?
It's all set up. I mean, first of all, you have, you know, state licensing and you have municipal licensing, and they're both, you know, if you're going to open a retail marijuana shop in Denver, you need a state license and a local license.
Okay. So did the city have to approve to get kind of opt in or opt out of that, or how did that?
Yes. Yeah. The legalization is an opt-in process. I think less than half the counties in the state have opted in.
Okay.
City and County of Denver has opted in, and I would suspect that at least half. I mean, I think it's probably the epicenter of all of it. I think most of the licenses, both in grow and retail, are set in Denver, and then the other counties that have opted in will have that as well. But I think it's less than half. I mean, there's still a significant part of the state that does not have any sort of cultivation or sale.
Okay. So the state itself is almost divided on where you can get it and where you can't.
A little bit. I mean, obviously, you know, the Front Range, the population centers generally went for it. The ski areas and the tourist areas and corridors that are more well-traveled tended to, but the more rural agricultural areas in the state, a lot of them did not.
Did it become a real hot button issue by community and whether probably pack meetings and stuff?
I'm not entirely sure. Yeah. I mean, I think some looked at it as a perhaps a way to, you know, when it's there, might as well make it manageable, legal, and regulated. Other areas probably saw it as some sort of revenue boost. I really don't know. I mean, what goes into that mix? Yeah. I know I live in a suburb of Denver, and our county has opted out of it.
Okay.
But the city and county of Denver clearly is one of the bigger players.
Okay. So you're talking about the licensing. Go back to that part. So you have to get the state license, you have to get a municipal license, you have to opt in.
And those revenues, you were talking about revenues. Yeah. There's a large portion that immediately goes to the schools in the state. There's, I think, the first $40 million of excise funds is earmarked for school construction.
Oh.
A huge part of it is also goes to a school fund. I think 15% of that revenue goes to the actual municipality that is the locus for the sales. There's a whole distribution structure for that. And, you know, as I say, there are a lot more hires, a lot more infrastructure needed to manage it.
Right.
So in terms of the net, I couldn't tell you that it's been a huge revenue gain.
Yeah.
And since it's only less than 1% of the budget, you know, it's not going to solve every, you know, municipality's financial issues.
Has the city of Denver specifically earmarked that revenue for any particular project or effort or initiative?
You know, a large portion of it goes to the school system. It also goes to employees that have been hired for the process, testing labs, that sort of thing.
How did those decisions get made as far, was that all state legislator deciding the 40%, the 12%, and those different things that you mentioned? Did they all did that in anticipation of it happening?
I mean, at the state level,
so that was
that,
probably
that structure was set up. They set up, it's called the Marijuana Enforcement Division, okay. A division of the state that essentially is the entity that regulates and manages the industry from right. The state level. And then on the municipal level, you would have I probably excise and license would be the biggest.
I'm guessing like Michigan, it's just, you know, it's just a straight vote. Do you want this or not? They don't get into the specifics of how that hall's gonna work. So I'm guessing Colorado didn't have that either.
Well, I don't know what they're planning. I do know in Michigan, but I do know that, you know, in Colorado, the passage was then followed up by a lot of regulatory. Considerations,
legislation
driven from the state level and then the local level as well.
Okay. All right. So, did it pass pretty convincingly by the voters? Do you remember? I have to go back and look.
I don't recall. I don't think it was a squeaker.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it was the first or the second time on the ballot.
Yeah.
That I really am not so sure. Right. I was not dealing with it at the passage. I was in private practice for many years and then came over to the city because it just seemed like a great opportunity to get involved in a whole new area of law.
Okay. Wow. What was the interest for you in that particular area?
I don't have a particular, you know, passion for marijuana. It's not that. It's just...
I wasn't implying that. I don't know.
No, I was just at a place in my career where, you know, my kids were grown. I'd been in private practice for many years and traveled a lot and was looking for a change.
Yeah.
And this came up and it just seemed like a really interesting area. I mean, Colorado was the first state to legalize recreational marijuana. It wasn't the first for medical, but it was... on the retail side. In fact, the first in the world. People always think Amsterdam, of Amsterdam.
Yeah, right. I thought everything's legal over there.
Yeah, exactly. But they really had more of a don't ask, don't tell situation. It wasn't truly legal. It was just managed and dealt with on a much more sort of informal level.
Yeah,
so really Colorado was the first, and that just sounded interesting to me.
Yeah, well, cool. So let's get into the we're talking, keep going around the legalities or the issues that you deal with. What are some of the legal things that have come up that you find yourself dealing with on a regular basis?
Sure. Well, in the beginning, I think when the rollout happened, there were really some unanticipated issues that sort of, almost made themselves known through, the morning paper as much as anything you can anticipate.
Oh, really?
Because it was entirely new.
Right. What were some of those?
In the beginning, there was a big issue with the butane extraction process. You have flower product, marijuana, traditional marijuana, and then there are all sorts of extraction processes, concentrates, different byproducts that are made from it. And there's an extraction process that makes a very, very concentrated form of THC marijuana that involves butane, and people were doing this, sort of a don't try this at home thing.
Mm.
And there were explosions and fires and problems that just weren't anticipated.
Yeah.
Not I don't want to overstate it, but
right.
Even one house blowing up in your neighborhood is a problem.
Yes, exactly.
So that was
an issue.
You think
of that with the meth issue. That
right. You don't think of it with marijuana.
Right.
But butane extraction can be very dangerous, unless it's a closed system where it's all contained. And it wasn't. They were taking PVC pipe and, shoving butane through the weed to create this concentrate. So that was immediately shut down. But then, there was debate over, were there safer ways to make extraction products? And so commercially, it's a different issue, but at home, it's just not something you want your neighbor doing.
Right.
So that had to be regulated, and they compromised on a cold water process that is much safer and tends not to blow houses up.
Okay.
So that, that was something nobody anticipated. Pesticides was another huge issue. Pesticides, are federally regulated. Mm-hmm. They're regulated by the EPA. And, if you're a commercial grower or you're kind of at sea, you say, well, that's, you know, what can I use? And so I think the attitude was a bit, you know, among these growers that, you know, if there's nothing approved for marijuana, I'll just use anything. And so they were using things that you just shouldn't be using on consumable products.
I see.
And the city spent a lot of energy looking at the pesticide regulation. They were using pesticides in a manner that just wasn't safe for the public. So the Department of Health, the city's Department of Health, stepped in and started shutting them down, these grows, just like you would shut down a restaurant who had a code violation.
Sure, right.
The only difference is instead of dealing with 12 chickens that you're saying have salmonella, you're dealing with a $5 million grow operation you're saying has pesticides on it. So the stakes were higher.
Yes.
The money was higher. But,
so, but people were getting sick from
but
this?
But the concept was the same. Well, it just, you know, it was something that, you know, there was no data to support the safety.
Okay.
So they worked with the community to come up with a list of, because again, pesticides are federally regulated and they're not stepping into it. So there's no way you're going to get a federally approved pesticide for marijuana because
they don't recognize
there's
marijuana.
That big wall between state and federal.
Well, that's interesting. I think a lot of people don't realize that. They're still federally, it's against
federally
the law.
It's federally illegal. Yeah.
And, but states are going ahead saying, well, we're going to do it anyway.
Well, under federal law, it's a Schedule I drug.
Yeah.
And so it is illegal under federal law. The compromise essentially was that the federal government took a position through a position paper that essentially says, look, as long as you're not supporting illegal drug operations, or there was a criteria. There was a letter and a criteria about seven or eight things, and they're saying, as long as you're doing this and not creating an issue that is more of an interstate federal issue, then we will leave it to the states on how they're going to regulate it.
Is there still a threat there that the federal government can come in and say, hey, we've been saying this is illegal, you need to stop doing that?
Yes, there is.
Yeah. And is there cases that kind of...
The original position paper from the government came from the prior administration. The new administration came in and modified that letter, which caused some concern. But there is still, at least at this point, no indication that the federal agencies are going to use their resources to shut down state operations, but it's certainly possible.
Okay.
But we're at a tipping point, you know. I mean, I think at this point, 27, 28 states, I don't really know, I haven't checked, but I'd say close to 30 states have some form of legalization through medical.
Either the medical.
And then, you know, upwards of a dozen or so have the recreational. So we're reaching a tipping point where the federal government, you know, is going to have to make some decision or not. But
I think Michigan would be the first Midwest state. Ohio, Indiana, I have to look that up. So
yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, Colorado and California were the first.
Or Washington.
Washington and Oregon, California now. So, you know. But it was really left to the local municipalities how they were going to deal with the nuts and bolts of it.
Right. So, yeah, so let's get into that a little bit. What's some lessons learned, particularly for the city of Denver, as you know, if Michigan does approve it in November, it's going to really come down a lot of city decisions. We have I think the way the ballot is structured, it's cities will have to opt out. They're automatically opted in unless they opt, and they have to opt out, which is reverse of what the medical has been, is you have to opt in order to allow it with dispensaries and different things. So it's a little bit different. So every city's going to have to decide, because if they do nothing, then it's going to be allowed. So,
right. Now, that's interesting. I think, you know, in Colorado, I think it was, I mean, it wasn't a difficult process, but it was an affirmative process. So I think less than half the counties, as I say, have opted in. The larger population centers have opted in. Then you've got municipalities within that. If you're a home rule city and can make your own rules, you can set them that way. If you're a county that's just, or a city that's part of that county and not on a home rule type status, then you go with however the county's going to go.
Right.
But in Denver, you know, City and County of Denver, which is the largest population center, they had opted into it both for the medical and then in 2012 for the retail side. So Your question was...
Lessons learned.
Lessons learned.
Yeah, what was something that you think...
Take your time.
Advice you could give to Michigan, I guess.
Well, it's interesting. You know,
take your time is a good one.
As I was saying, it was passed by the voters in 2012, but the first sale didn't happen until January 2014.
So 2 years. So this was when the legislator got involved, making the rules.
I think, you know, that's the first lesson is build a nice long runway. You really don't want to just... you know, obviously the voters have spoken and you want to fulfill their mandate, but
yeah.
There needs to be some structure for the rollout. Otherwise, it's a bit of a free-for-all.
Yeah.
And again, it's not an unfettered constitutional right to marijuana
right.
in Colorado. It is essentially an affirmative defense against prosecution for a very small amount of marijuana.
Okay.
So there's a difference. I mean, you know, you have a constitutional right to free speech.
Yes.
And even it has some restrictions, time, place restrictions.
Right. Safety. You can't yell fire in a church.
Exactly. And so this is even more restrictive than that. It's it is a constitutional amendment that gives you an affirmative defense against prosecution as long as you're within those boundaries of, you know, 1 ounce of personal possession, 6 plants per person at home, that sort of thing. And, So the regulatory scheme needs to, you know, develop a little more organically over time instead of just saying, okay, everybody have at it.
Right.
And I think that's what we've done, and it's changed.
Yeah.
I think in the beginning, the number of plants per residential property was higher, and the state has found through that process that needs to be lower.
Oh.
And
have they enforced that yet, or is that
in City and County of Denver? Yes.
What was the change from?
It used to be up to, you know, it was 6 plants per 21-year-old adult in the residence, and up to no more than 36 plants per property.
Mm.
They've now reduced that to 12 plants, just because.
What was
you know,
the issue
36
there?
Plants
was this a lot? And was this too much?
It's a lot. You also have what they call caregivers. For medical purposes, and a caregiver, you know, someone who has a medical license or, you know, what they call a red card for personal use, they can grow themselves or they can assign that obligation or duty or whatever to a caregiver.
Okay.
And that caregiver essentially becomes the grower for that person. And so a caregiver could grow multiple plants for folks. And they were finding that, these residential properties were having 50, 60, 70 plants, and that's harder to regulate. And then where's your red card, and what are you assigned, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
You know, I mean, the enforcement of it and the ability to step into a property and say, okay, this is okay, this is not, was important. And like I say, I mean, at least in Denver now, the plant count is 12, 6 flowering and 6 growing for any single residence.
Wow, so it gets real specific.
It does. It really does.
What about with the whole, you treat it like alcohol as opposed to operating under the influence, like for vehicles? What about that whole issue?
Well, the overall regulatory scheme is sort of patterned after alcohol. So in terms of impairment, if that's what you're talking about, obviously, you know, if you're impaired by alcohol, you're subject to arrest. Same with marijuana. I think with marijuana, it's a little tougher to, do a
tests?
Roadside test, that kind of thing. You know, it's much more difficult.
Okay.
So, and rather than getting into debates, because I think people's tolerance levels can be different.
Yeah.
You know, so some person might, have a small amount of marijuana and be impaired. Someone else might have a larger amount and still be fine, depending on their tolerance. So we don't really get into the debate of that.
Okay.
It's not a justifiable defense to say I can handle my marijuana better, no more than it is for alcohol.
Yeah.
And so there's a strict test for impairment on marijuana. It's like 5 nanograms per 100 milliliters of blood.
Is it a blood test? It's a blood test?
It can be done blood or urine. Blood is more accurate.
Okay, so they do have a parts per kind of thing. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And... So that's how it's regulated, from that perspective.
Okay. I had a person here from Colorado about a year ago on the podcast. She came to our convention last year. And one of the things she talked about was some kind of unforeseen problems, I guess, from her perspective. She wasn't more of a law enforcement perspective, so she had more maybe that someone would construe as a negative view on the issue. And she said it led to maybe more homelessness, that people came to Colorado to get into the business, and mm-hmm. they found themselves not be able to find jobs or homes that they thought they could just work in the industry. Did you find that in the city of Denver, or was there any problems like cursory problems like that that resulted?
Well, it certainly has. I don't have the data to back sure. it up. My sense is that it's not the parade of horribles that people sort of anticipate.
Okay.
I think people who used marijuana before are probably the same number that are using now. It's
okay.
just it's regulated now and safer and taxed. I don't know that there was a huge, you know, slippery slope of problems. Certainly not in Denver. The homeless population is always an issue. Mm-hmm. Folks who came here without any means and came just because of the marijuana laws, you know, I think certainly that was an issue to a point. But, you know, we're now no longer the first, so...
Yeah.
You know, there are, I think, 11 or 12 other states that
yeah.
have the recreational sales, so perhaps that's not as much of
an
issue.
You guys been a model of a lot of these other states come to you and say, okay, what have you done since you guys were the first?
Well, that is true. I mean, yeah. the mayor's office and the excise and license office of folks, I mean, they were, in the beginning, I think it was hard for them to even get their job done because there were so many people from other jurisdictions, other outside the country, inside the country, all saying, can we come see what you're doing?
Yeah.
And so it was tough because you couldn't attend to, you know, your regular work because you were so busy doing tours and talking.
Sure, right.
At a certain point, the city actually started holding an annual seminar because it was easier to say, hey, we're having a seminar next month, come to that, instead
yeah.
of I'll take half a day from my regular work.
Right.
And so we have done, I think, 3 years now. Done a seminar on recreational marijuana, and it's well attended by all kinds of folks.
Okay, yeah. mayors yeah. from other cities and
yeah.
okay. So, anything else you think maybe something came up during the session, or anything else you think it's important about this issue as not only people head of the polls, but it, you know, should it get passed as mayors and council members, you know, kind of move forward and trying to figure this all out?
Well, it certainly was, you know, the will of the people. You know, setting aside any sort of judgmental side of it, I mean, that was the mandate, and that's
yeah.
what the state and the city has tried to honor. But it's complicated.
Yeah.
There are a lot of unforeseen things. Certainly having the time to build a runway before you're taking off makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And things like these butane extractions or pesticides, all these things came
yeah.
up after legalization that
yeah.
weren't really anticipated.
Right.
And so it does make sense to do it in a measured fashion and try and learn from other jurisdictions that have been the first in the water.
Okay.
But overall, it certainly has not created a parade of horribles that the state has not been able to deal with.
Yeah.
And in some ways, certainly, it's better to regulate and manage and tax the industry that's there. I don't know that there are more users or less. They're just now regulated and have a safer infrastructure for dealing with it. Doesn't mean there isn't going to be illegal operations trying to hide in plain sight.
Right.
And so law enforcement still has their job to do.
Sure.
But again, I think the more you have a fulsome regulatory structure, and the people at the municipal level as well as the state level to deal with it, it's certainly a manageable thing to do if that's the will of the people.
Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you so much for your time. Again, I was joined by Charles Mitchell, Senior Assistant City Attorney for the City of Denver, and we really appreciate you being here. So now that you're back in Michigan, do you have that acting bug again since you were once an actor way back in the day?
No.
You don't do community theater or nothing? You just gave it all up. I don't understand that. I don't know how you could do that.
Well, I did it for about 20 years.
Oh, wow. I guess
time,
you got it.
And
okay.
I got kids and... I still, you know, I have a friend who does voiceover work, and they'll call me every once in a while and do something. Or
okay.
you can do, you know, a small film role.
Yeah.
You can do that
yeah.
and still take a couple of days and do it. But, you know,
is there a lot of
8 weeks to rehearse and perform a play?
Yeah. Is there movies that filmed in Denver where you're like, hey, we need a guy who looks like an attorney, and they come calling or anything like that?
Well, yeah. Well, when I was an actor, I worked quite a bit with the filmmaker John Sayles. I don't know if you know John.
Of course. Yeah.
Was sort of the the godfather of independent movies.
Yes.
He's really started that whole
thing. I wanted to sound smart and name one of his movies, but I can't do it right off the top of my head. My son was sitting here.
Lone Star maybe was one of the bigger ones. Okay. Anyway, he called up and said, hey, I'm in Colorado. I'm going to make a movie. And it's like, hey, you know, put me to work. And
okay.
So I've done a couple of things with him since.
Oh, great. But anything we see coming up or no?
No.
All right, good. Well, I appreciate your time, and thank you for joining us here at the Michigan Municipal League's 2018 convention.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.